Welcome back to another episode of the DAP Fitness Business Podcast. And today we are talking about the what if situation, which is something that a lot of coaches face and actually stops them from launching their own program. And it's the what if situation. What if no one joins? What if nobody wants to buy my program? Dan, what if?
What if? That is the big question, isn't it? Well, what if you don't do anything at all? Then you'll probably be all right because nothing will happen anyway. So,
yeah.
But then you'll never know.
Yeah. And this comes down to that analysis paralysis situation that so many coaches have, where when they're designing their new program or their workout or their group thing or whatever else, they start overanalyzing it. You know, I've got to do this. I've got to make sure this is 100%. But they never launch anything because they're always tweaking it. And they've got this thing in their mind. Well, I've got to get 100% because what if nobody wants to join? What if nobody wants what I've got to sell?
Yeah, exactly. But you'll never know if you don't actually put anything out there or if you don't actually start to test this. And like we were speaking about a moment ago before, like, I'm a bigger fan of just get something to a stage where you can get it working and then get people into it, because you'll gather feedback, and that's not going to be the final thing. It's not going to be that's it, and then that's the only thing you're ever going to do. You're going to refine that, and what better way to do it than by getting people into it, start working with people?
Yeah, it's the minimum viable product, isn't it? So when you launch something new, even as coaches with our expert knowledge of our clients and all that other stuff, we don't know really if this program is going to 100% solve that person's problem until we start to actually coach them in it and find out, well, actually, they don't need a weekly check-in. They only need like a 2-weekly check-in. It's too much to do to have 2-weekly check-ins, to have 1-weekly check-in, sorry. But we might think in our brains, oh, they need that, you know, because if they don't have it, what if? What if they don't have a weekly check-in? They might go off the rails, so they need a weekly check-in. But from the client point of view, actually, they don't want that, for an example.
No. And also, to remember that people are going to come and work with you based off the main driver is you. So they're going to connect with you off the back of potentially stuff they've seen or they've heard or they've seen stuff with it before. So if you're spending all your time trying to create this perfect thing, which has got all singing, all dancing, apps and video libraries and recipe and all this stuff that is just, let's be honest, fluff that's nice to have there. I'm not saying it's not important. I'm saying it's a nicety, but they're going to come and work with you not because of that, because of the way they connect with you. That's way more important. So they're more worried about that than whether you've got the latest My Fitness Pal guide. All right.
Yeah, exactly right. So what we've done is before we started the podcast, because we're professionals, we actually got a list together of some ideas to talk about. And these are things that are what we would say, things like a checklist for when you're making a program for coaches to look at, say, have I got all these things in place? Because if I have, then it's very it's less likely that nobody's going to join or nobody's going to be interested. So we're going to go through those. And if you've got a pen and paper, take notes, because I don't think we've actually reached the level of professionalism of transcribing our podcast just yet. So if you can take a note and then just check you've got all these buzzwords in place. So the first one we've got is, what is the unique problem that you're solving for the person? Which I suppose comes down to niche, doesn't it? And identifying your ideal customer.
Yeah, definitely. If you are clear on that anyway, and you're getting some kind of feedback from content you're putting out there and the message you've got across, then you should really instantly know your target audience and the problems that they've got. And does this product or this service that you're offering help to solve those? Then that should give you some confidence to go, actually, Joe, yeah, probably be all right. Someone will sign up. Someone's going to come on.
Yeah. And I think the I know when I did Dent, they were talking about this a lot. And it's don't design your product before you've researched your customer base. So, for example, don't just think, do you know what people need? They need a vegan recipe book. they absolutely do need that, and they need a vegan training program, and they need or whatever, you know, they need a keto friendly kettlebell program, keto bells program, you know, that's what people need. So then you spend ages designing this keto bells program with its special, like, sort of optimized vegan recipe books and stuff like that, and you put it out there and people go, no mate, I don't need that at all.
Yeah.
It might be something that would be working for them, but they just have no desire to do it.
Yeah. I've done that in the past, not with programs so much, but with that, we do it with lead magnets and things. So if you don't research that and you think, oh, this is a really good idea, everyone's going to love this, and then you create this thing, put it out there. Nah, because you've created it off the back of what you think people need, not what they actually need. So,
yeah. I mean, case in point there is that I used to have the recipe books as a lead magnet. And although they brought in plenty of leads because people wanted recipe books, it didn't bring in the people that were actually then going to go forward and buy my coaching program. It just brought in people who wanted recipe books. Yeah. So from that, I had loads of people on my email list, but not a lot of like opens and not a lot of engagement with the emails. So I dropped that and just made it a feature of my coaching.
That's it. I was sort of like, I was trying to call Eddie with someone about recipe books. They're like, oh, recipe books, we can use them. I was like, when have you ever downloaded a recipe book and actually looked at it? I'm like, I've got recipe books, actual books, don't even look at them. Like,
we've got a recipe book in our kitchen, and it's one that Sam has, and it's called From the Dukan Diet, which it's some weird diet which I've never done, and she did for about a week, I think. And she's got this recipe book in the kitchen. And the other day I said, you know, that book's been there for ages. I've never seen you read it. I've never seen you open it. So now we've replaced it with a protein like cookie recipe book or something. And that's going to get much more use because we actually do make protein cookies.
Ah, all right. I'm going to say, just swapped out the aesthetics, something else.
Yeah. So when people come visiting us, they know that we're like protein people and we train rather than like
fad diets.
Like fad diet people. so make sure that when you're designing your program, you've talked to your customers, you know, and a good way of doing this is just a very, very simple way of doing a Facebook post or an Instagram post saying, if you wanted to have a program for, say, building muscle, what would you like to see in it? Really easy, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you wanted a program for fat loss, what would be the three things that you would want help with? Very easy. And sometimes you get weird responses from Facebook. Like I think when I did the one about, I did this for build, I said, oh, if I was going to do a program which focuses purely on muscle building, like building lean muscle, what would you like? The amount of people who put free tread in it were like, I was like, that's not happening, mate.
That's probably me.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. Like, doing the research is a really easy way to do it. And you can get them involved, can't you? So you get them involved in this process, which I think is really powerful when you're doing this stuff, to like get them involved in the build. Like, oh, cool, I'm creating this thing, I'd love to have your input on this. And then you can keep them updated along the way. And that's a really cool way of knowing that you've got potential people to actually position this to at the end as well.
It is a good one for, it's like that IKEA effect, isn't it? People like to, when they're involved in building something or helping towards something, they become more appreciative of it or more bonded to it or something like that.
Yeah.
So if you are surveying your email list, your customer base, saying, oh, this is the program, you know, this is what I've got in it, you know, what do you think about this? And then, and along the way, all these people are commenting, saying, oh, I'd like to see this, I'd like to see this. And then, and you're involved in the naming of it and all that sort of stuff. Well, yeah, you're building it from the grassroots up. But also you're creating that spark, aren't you? Creating that interest in like, this thing is coming. Mm. And you know, when it launches, they already know about it because you've talked about them helping you build it for all that time.
Yeah, definitely. We've done this a lot with our programs, and we did it with the academy, we did it with the coaching circle, like community group that we built. The whole build was made with input from coaches, which was mega. And then just thinking, like, one of the lads at the moment I work with, he's doing an academy, and his responses to, like, just from putting out there, I want your help with it because of his audience and the way he's built this audience up. It's just incredible. They're like, they're just like, yeah, I want to help. I want to, anything you need, like, take all of this information. It's it's just perfect because you just build exactly what they want. And just for me, that's the best way to create these things. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So cool. Okay. So make sure the unique problem that you're solving is something that people actually want.
Yeah.
And you can do that by surveying your audience.
And it just, I know we're going to the next one, but don't be afraid to use your networks to survey. I think people get too up in their own heads about this a little bit. It's like, well, I've got this Instagram page and no one really replies to anything I do on there because it's like a small account and that. Why have you got a Facebook page with like your friends on it or whatever who you can reach out to, or do you have any groups that you can reach out to on your WhatsApp or whatever who you can just find some information from? People are too worried about what potential friends and family are going to think, where you should think the other way. These people will be the biggest supporters of what you're doing, hopefully, and will then tell other people about it. So I just wanted to get that point across because I think it gets missed sometimes.
Yeah, because people will, if they're not interested, will tag their friends, won't they? You know, so yeah, and so Facebook is very good for that. Okay, so then the next point we had was, who is this program perfect for? And I don't think certainly a lot of the people I've spoke to in the past, they're of the impression that, well, anybody can do this program. You know, it's a fat loss program, so anybody can do this. Okay, so does fat loss work the same for a woman who's 45 who wants to lose 30 kilos to a 19-year-old woman who only needs to lose 1 kilo to look good when she's going out clubbing? There's two, although the method, calorie deficit, that's there, isn't it? It's the same method. It's going to be completely different. Two different people, two different views on life, two different ways they live their life. Yeah. It's not going to be perfect for both of them, is it?
No, this is a big thing. I think maybe if you took this back 5 years, maybe more, like stuff like that was probably a little bit easier, but now it's not. It's nowhere near, you just can't do that. And I see it a lot from coaches who are potentially coming from PT or in person in a location-based role to move into a little bit online. And then when you're in that location, you get the natural kind of footfall, you get the people who are in there, you can make conversations if you're in and about the place. That's captive because you've got those people who come into it. But then when you go onto the online, it's not that. There is anyone who's going to find your stuff or whoever. So if you're still trying to have that same impact where you can work with a 50-year-old and a 20-year-old in the gym environment, you can't really do that as well online. You won't be able to market to them as effectively. So,
And the other thing to remember about like being on in a bricks and mortar establishment is, say like for ministry, you know, the people who come to ministry, although they might be different ages, different walks of life, etc., they've come to that gym because they like that community. So they're already in a sort of a mindset which everyone else is in. Does that make sense? You know, so although, you know, you might have like a 30-year-old woman and a 19-year-old woman or whatever, they all like lifting. They all like, you know, a bit of fun and games because we do like, you know, different classes, all that sort of stuff. They all have a community sense where everyone's supporting each other. So there already is that sort of niche in common. But yeah, you can niche down further. But yeah, I see what you're saying. When you get to online, some people online don't want to train in gyms. They want to do their keto bells workout. You know, so it's got to be really specific when you're talking about an online program, because there is so many online programs, isn't there?
Yeah, the need to have something that stands out, that's different to what everything else is out there, is important. Like we said, you're not trying to reinvent something. You're not like trying to have something completely off the wall and new. Well, maybe you will, but it doesn't need to be that. That like the principles are there, but you need to make it yours and stand out and be specific to that audience, because not only will you connect more and be able to market that easier, you'll be able to get better outcomes for those people anyway, because it will all be geared up to help them with a specific problem.
Which brings us on to our next point, is as well as this big problem they've got, as in I can't lose weight, what are the other problems that that person is facing? So you do really have to know about your niche. Otherwise, you're going to say, yeah, you know, I want you to prep 4 meals a day from scratch and do 4 a.m. cardio. Now, arguably, the 19-year-old woman who has potentially no commitments, lives at home potentially, all this, I know I'm stereotyping here, but compared to a, say, a 40-year-old mother with three kids who's got to be at work at 9 o'clock in the morning and get the kids to school, one of them is going to be able to prep four meals a day and one of them isn't.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to have that understanding of the audience inside out. And like you mentioned, it's not just their goal of, like, I want to lose weight. It's getting deeper into, okay, what are the barriers stopping someone from doing this? How long has it taken to get to this point where they've reached out to you, and what are those things that they've tried along the way? Would that be all the historical information that I'd be wanting to know, that so I can speak to them about it? But also before that, because we were asking people to sign up, like, I'll be putting that into every single piece of content. I'll be just talking about it all the time, so that they know that, oh yeah, this person gets me, and that way they're more likely to come work with you.
Yeah, exactly right. And we I think our next point was talking about exactly that, wasn't it? What problems have they faced in the past that have stopped them achieving this thing they want to achieve? And if you don't know that, and you're still giving them 4 a.m. cardio and 4 prep meals a day, they're just not going to get any success. And so, of course, they're not going to get any, they're not going to give you any good testimonials. They're not going to recommend you to their friends, and they're probably not going to get any results.
It's going to be not enjoyable for anyone.
No, exactly. Because again, if you haven't specifically said who this program is for, and this is the problems we help solve, and if you've had these problems in the past, we'll amend these sorts of things, and this is how we run the program. If you haven't said all that stuff, and you get someone coming in who is completely the opposite, because you just said, yeah, it's a fat loss program, anybody can lose weight with my super secret method of, no carbs and no calories and loads of cardio, then those people are going to come in and go, I can't lose weight.
Yeah. Here's how I think of it is, if you are the kind of person who's, hey, I'm not quite comfortable with speaking to someone on calls because I feel like, you know, it's a bit, you know, pushes me out of my comfort zone, or you know, I don't really know how to communicate the program to get them to sign up on a call. But then you're also not happy or comfortable with talking about the specific problems in your content and doing that consistently and doing it over a period of time. Then don't be surprised if someone does get on a call with you, and then you're trying to make this work, and there's that resistance there because they don't know anything about it, because you've been sporadic with putting out marketing before, and they've ended up on a call with you anyway because, I don't know, you've got them on that call. Maybe your super sales script is like it's not backing you up here. You've got to that point, they're not really feeding off your energy, and you'll just find that you start sweating a little bit, and you're like, actually, you just wish the world would just open up and swallow you. That's all down to not knowing enough about the problems, the real problems. I'm not talking about, oh, here's some protein ideas for you or whatever it is. It's like, no, what about the emotions and the feelings that they're going through, and how can you communicate? You want them to read your content and go, shit, that guy is actually, or woman is actually talking to me. That's how you want to connect. Because then when they do get on a call with you, they're like, I know how you do things. I know who you help. I've seen all the cool stuff you do. Let's just get going. And then your calls are like, fuck, I love this. I love doing consultation calls. How it should be.
I know we've talked about this at length previously, about the sales call is like that cherry on the top.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff you do beforehand makes that a lot easier, doesn't it? Whether it's a 400-pound cherry, or it's which is really hard to put on top of the cake, or a nice one that just fits rightly and just sets that, oh, that looks all perfect now. And I think, again, we see so many, I know, because I did a research thing the other day on Facebook. Sorry, it's a tangent. Facebook and Instagram. But I was scrolling, and I found that every third post on Facebook is an advert.
Oh, really?
If you scroll on Facebook, and I did Instagram as well, I think, no, it's 1, 2, 3, then an advert. So it's every fourth post on Facebook is an advert, and every third one on Instagram is an advert. That is mega. Or it's the other way around. But I was looking at it thinking, why am I seeing so many bloody adverts for, like, fitness pros and, like, you know, remote coaching professional and that sort of stuff? I'm seeing so many of those adverts at the moment. And then I looked through my feed, and it was literally every third post was an advert, or every fourth post on Facebook.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And So that's why you see so many of this stuff. And do you know why? That's why so many coaches, so many people who are doing a lot of adverts, have now tried to make their adverts look more like posts than adverts. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you scroll down, there's a lot of people putting in like rough around the edges adverts. Yeah, so they look like people's posts.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
One of mine's like that.
But yeah,
there was some thought behind it because it was just me. I'm sat here and I've recorded off my phone. And
I've seen that one.
Have you? Oh, okay, see?
Yeah. 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 And it, but it hit well because it obviously looks like a post rather than looks like an advert. So if, and obviously if you get, you know, Facebook ads, another conversation, but if someone is engaged with your content and you've got adverts running and that pops up, they're probably going to stop. Whereas if you had a traditional advert post, people go, oh, fuck off, it's another advert. You know, even if they like you, fuck off, advert. So, every third or fourth post is an advert. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Now you've pointed that out, I'm going to see it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what got me onto that. What were we talking about? things that stopped them in the past, I think. I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember how we tangented into that. When you're looking at these adverts that pop up on your feed, if a lot of them are just buy my shit, yeah, and they're like, oh, we've helped. I saw one the other day and it was talking about working from anywhere, you know, like do you want to be, oh, I know we touched on this before as well, do you want to be a coach and work from anywhere? And all the pictures were like a guy riding a camel by the sea in Egypt. You know, what was missing, he didn't have a fucking laptop with him. It's just like riding this camel with his mobile phone.
You can't use a laptop on a camel. It's not safe.
Can you not? Well, if you go on a camel which has a thing each side, because I've done this in Lanzarote, so you go on one side and your partner goes on the other side, and you can have a little table and do your laptop like taping in the sides.
You need the executive camel. Yeah.
There's that volcano. Oh, shut up! I'm just replying to someone on Facebook. So all the adverts were that, and I thought, well, for one, I have kids, so when I go on holiday, I do take my laptop, but I don't like, you know, do my work when the kids are around. I do it in the evening, like, you know, whatever. And and the other thing is that none of these people had kids in these pictures. It was all like, you know, I know there are some people who work in different countries and from the beach and do have kids, of course there are, because a few of them are on my Facebook, really nice people, but that's the minority. I mean, we were just talking about it just before we got on the call about obviously how you are knowing now what it's like to be a dad, and nothing can prepare you for that, and you know, nothing can prepare you for that, and there's no way that the majority of people, if they have kids, are going to be working from the beach in Bali because their kids have got to go to school.
Yeah.
they've got to do all these things that so that advert was not targeted towards me whatsoever. I just thought it was hilarious talking about riding a camel and doing DMs.
Yeah. I suppose that's the targeting, isn't it? But then also, well, maybe there's a lot to dig into in that, in terms of how they've using that ad to who they're targeting. Maybe they're just targeting personal trainers in general, then that's not quite right. Because like you said, I couldn't imagine. I mean, I'd hate it personally anyway. I need to be either in here or, I don't know, I struggle to work anywhere else. Can't do it.
We talked about anchoring before, haven't we? Anchoring to a workplace. We talked about work-life balance on that podcast. And having an office where you go into work focuses you on your work. And I think every person I know who is, I know we're going tangent again, every person who is a coach has like a coffee shop or a place they work. None of the people I know actually work from the beach. You know, no, I don't know anybody who is a successful coach. And I know someone's going to write in and go, oh, I know someone who's a successful coach. But no one I've seen, although they might live out in Dubai or in like Bali or whatever else, their work gets done from their nice little office, which overlooks the beach. They never work on the beach and they never work riding a camel.
I'd love to see that.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Imagine they signed it to someone's course. Hey, welcome to the course. I'm just riding my camel in Indonesia.
Brilliant.
I've just jumped on my elephant to go down the shops. But yeah, you're really engaging with your audience there.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
What are we on? I'm talking about coaching or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Where do we get to? Oh, yeah, it was things that stopped them in the past, wasn't it? Problems that stopped them succeeding in the past. So I think the next one we got was, can the people you're marketing to or talking to actually afford the program? Because that might be a reason why they don't join your program. So again, that's making sure that the niche you're marketing to is the right niche. So like if you've got a coaching program for transforming fat loss or whatever else, and it's £500 a month, but you're talking about the joys of student life and all your marketing, there's a bit of a disconnect there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it goes back a little bit. You can test that out, can't you? Do a bit of research with your research. You can find out, okay, is my audience, what would that look like from a price point of view? Maybe you can look at some other people who potentially are marketing to the same audience and see what they're doing, just to kind of get an idea. Because again, it goes back to that thing. You don't want to start putting that out there and then your price point, everyone's just like, no, can't do it. I guess this ties into a little bit of like the pre-qualification sometimes, that when people do come on, you could have that in there. But I think you can also do a lot of stuff with your content before to position your service as what it is. And but like we said right at the beginning, if you do not take action on any of this, what gives you, you don't have got nothing to position that with. Like your service is not a thing, it's just not there. Yeah. So if you want to increase your price point, you need to start working with people to refine the service to then charge more.
One way of doing this is what I did with Build Body when I launched it. I originally launched it at £99, and I knew that wasn't going to be the final price or the final cost of the program. But I launched it at £99, so that when I was doing all my marketing, because I knew the sort of people I wanted to bring in, I wanted to see when they came in and obviously when they complete the program and I've talked to them, I could get an idea then about what their jobs were, what their disposable income is, but what they spend their money on, the things they like to do, all that sort of stuff. So I started to build up an idea of, well, this is the demographic of the people that like to do build the program. And I had an idea about where I wanted the price point to be at the end. And eventually it was a £250, which is where it stayed. But that was something that everyone who came on the program could afford, like ethically, morally, you know, whatever else we've talked about in the four, they could afford that. And going any more wouldn't have been viable. And going any less maybe wouldn't have been as good for me. So yeah, there's some people who couldn't afford it, but the majority of people who I actually spoke to could afford it, because £250 is, let's face it, it's not a massive amount of money, but it is if you're, say, living on benefits, for example, which yeah. wasn't my market.
That's what I mean. So you've also done that part of how you marketed that was to those people, and then that price point was right for that market. So it makes sense. But again, you did the thing of getting people in to get people working it. And also you've got proof then, you can talk about it more and all the other stuff that comes with it. So yeah.
I think there's definitely a case for, and I know we talked about this before as well, is when you're launching a new product, is having a heavily discounted, or sometimes if you're running a real beta test and you've never done it before, sometimes you'll do it for free to get that experience, to get that initial knowledge about what people want. Because obviously you're not going to have a shortage of people coming on board if it is a free program, but you've still got to do your vetting at the beginning to make sure those people are the right people for what you want to do.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed.
I think I've done both of those, because when I did Target Lean, when we first launched Target Lean, this was like 8 years ago, I think, it was a free program because I had no experience about working with groups. I had no experience about coaching multiple people at the same time. So I'd always done one-to-one. So I wanted to learn how to coach groups. So I invited people to come on for free. And I think I had about 20 people come on. But it's great because I managed to test my systems, my program, see what the people wanted, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, okay, I was doing that all that for nothing. But what I was gaining was the experience of launching the program.
Yeah.
And then obviously when I just talked about when I did build, it wasn't free to start, but I had coached people in the past on group programs, so I had an idea about what to do. So I think if people are starting out, maybe it's a benefit to offer a free program to test your product. And then when you're older, you can offer, when you're older, when you're more experienced.
Yeah.
Sorry, slip. Then when you're more experienced, you can then say, well, I'm used to doing these programs, but here's a new one I'm launching. So I need to refine it. So you've got that social proof of having done the thing before. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I remember doing a 4-week free nutrition program. And it was actually the same. I really enjoyed it. I think there is definitely scope to do that at certain points. And I got a lot from that. And people signed up to work with me afterwards. So even though 4 weeks is a long time, it was a lot to come out of that. Social proof, just talking about it in general. It was good.
Yeah, I think that thing with when you it's what you're getting out of it. It's not so much let's say when you're saying at the beginning, you're doing a free one, what you're getting out of it is not the monetary benefit. It's the experiential experience. One of those words. That's what you're getting, isn't it? It's that really fast learning knowledge so that you can make a better program for the next time. Plus you get all the, you know, the testimonials, social proof, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. It was good. It was definitely worth it. If people are in that position, I would always say it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's and obviously you can do like free challenges and all that sort of stuff, but it's not really the same as running a full program where you're getting people going through from beginning to end and getting feedback all the way through.
Yeah, agreed.
Cool. So finally, we have So this is in two parts. So we're going to talk about features versus benefits, and not talking about always talking about the features. But in terms of the benefits, I know as evidence-based coaches, I know that you've had this discussion with people. I've certainly had it with people, is that when you get evidence-based coaches, they don't want to hyperbole up all their stuff that they're doing. You know, like, oh yeah, you know, you're going to get magical results in 6 weeks, you know, because that's the stuff we talk about not liking, isn't it? So we always talk about, oh yeah, you've got to be invested for the long term and all that sort of stuff. The problem is people don't want to think 6 months ahead. They want to think 6 days or 6 weeks ahead. What am I going to get in 6 weeks? And I don't think people talk enough about, yeah, of course that long-term benefit is relevant, but what are they going to get in those first 6 days, in that week, in that month, in the first 6 weeks?
Yeah.
They don't talk about what they can be achieved then. And as a result, they're always talking about this long-term thing, which people aren't interested in at all. No, not immediately anyway. Subconsciously, they might be.
Yeah, you got to meet the audience where they're at. Even if you are a evidence-based practitioner and you do everything like sustainable fat loss is what we're after. And I've always argued that no one sustains fat loss anyway. Like fat loss is part of the process, and then you just maintain wherever you're after. So
yeah,
fat loss doesn't need to be sustainable. If it is, you're doing something wrong.
or you're really big at the beginning.
Yeah. So having this all and good intentions, but you almost have to step out of your little bubble and go, my audience are here, and I know that I want to tell them about all these really good things, like that I want to get them to understand. But if you don't meet them here, they're never going to get to that point, and you're just going to end up talking about stuff that's here. And they're like, nah, I want bikini bodies, beach bodies, fat loss. And if you're not talking about it, guess who they're going to go and work with? Six pack shred guy or whatever it is. Like, and you don't like those people because I've seen your content. So you need to start stepping out of your zone a little bit to go, do you know what? I'll meet you here. Let's have some quick initial results or whatever it is that you provide. And then tell them about the cool stuff that happens later on, right?
Yeah. And people often say to me, gotta sound like one of those fucking
people always ask me.
People always ask me, you know, yeah. Insert thing that people never ask you. it does come up quite often. Say, am I gonna say this? I'm gonna have to edit this podcast so I don't look a twat. Okay. So how do you, no one's asked me, but I'm gonna say, how do you
oh dear.
Fuck's sake. Right, okay.
I thought I was supposed to be struggling.
I'm struggling, mate. I had to drop Jacob off at Breakfast Club this morning. I had to get up so early. And I didn't go to bed till 11:30 because I was watching Boardwalk Empire on TV. And it's It's brilliant. So anyway, okay. So how do you explain to people the benefits they're going to see in a week if they're not going to drop 10 pounds in a week? So how would they feel? How are they going to see their life change immediately? What I always used to talk about was immediately when you join, you're going to get the sense of you're doing something about your life. So there's positive motivation there. You're going to get the motivation you get whenever you start a new diet, but we're going to keep it going. We're going to make sure it doesn't go. Then immediately, well, in 3 days, you'll get your diet plan or whatever. And I used to give like smarter eating plans, and you'll get that smarter eating plan. So you'll start to know it, you'll start to eat better. So you'll start to feel better about that. Notice I'm not talked about losing weight or anything like that. We're talking about the other things that the other problems that they have, which they know they've got to sort out because they're eating rubbish and they haven't got no motivation. But if you can talk about those things, the things that aren't visible in the mirror, but how they're going to feel in the first week, people can really get in behind that and go, well, yeah, do you know what? I would like to start feeling better because I'm eating better. You know, yeah, I can see how that would happen. But you're not promising them, yeah, you're going to lose 10 pounds in the first week, no problem. Now, I'll just give you these diuretics and then these laxatives. Yeah. Just watch it fall out. Literally.
I think you can have part of your, depends on who you work with, obviously, but you can have some of your coaching, the way it's designed, to maybe initially have something at the beginning that encourages faster results or buy-in at the start, because why not? And if you can talk about that, that's something that potentially people are more interested in, that might get more buy-in initially. But like, if not, then yeah, talk about those things that you mentioned. And also this then knocks onto the fact that if you get people in and they do start talking about this in the first couple of weeks, grab all that information, and then I'd be putting that into my content to say, look what happens in the first 2 weeks of working.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can have in the first week a feedback form which you send out, or just on your Facebook group, or if you've got Slack or WhatsApp or whatever, if you have that little group and you say, right, what's been your experience with the first week? And you will, because people are super motivated in the first week, they'll say, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. And then you can obviously clip it, put it into Canva, edit out the bits you don't want, add in your own words, and then you've got what you want to say. Oh, sorry, that's not us, is it? That's other coaches that do that.
AI generated testimonials. That, yeah.
Or you can just get your own phone and just text yourself, and then just say, yeah. Oh, well, it just blown my mind. What's happened? Oh, dude, I've learned more in this than I've learned in 17 years of nutrition school. Oh, it's incredible.
I saw that again. I saw another one of those again this week. It was a type form that had been filled out themselves. Yeah. You could tell, because it was like no one would fill it out like that.
What did it say?
It was numbers. Like, oh, this is the target that they set for this month in terms of income. And it was an exact amount off. And then here's what's forecasted. Oh, look at that. It adds up to the target. I'm like, no one does that. So anyway.
there's a lot of it about. But yeah, but on a serious note, if you in the first week, and if you have like your progress week report, you can then, yeah, like you said, use it for social proof, which is quite a powerful thing to do. Because then obviously people, you want to set up for the next program, don't you? So, and if you've got a 6 week program, you've got potentially 6 or 8 weeks when that program starts to then set up for the next program. And people will see that, and it sort of builds up that anticipation for the next one.
Yeah, that's it.
Cool. I think that's all the points we had. Have we missed anything?
No, I think that covered quite a lot. That was good.
But yeah, some decent stuff there. Cool. Okay, so Dan, thanks for coming. And I can see that you're a bit tired today, and it's a good effort to come.
Really? Because I'm like, oh, I am tired, but we walked into the midwife appointment in the week, and Ashley's like, sort of come in first, and oh, you're looking amazing, like you're bounding in there with loads of energy. And I'm like, fine. And then she looked at me and she went, you not so much. And I was like, what? I came out, I was like, do I look tired? She went, yeah, you do. And I'm like, oh, okay. I need to go to get this sorted out, but I didn't think it was that bad, but maybe it is.
I got a picture of me in the first week of having Jacob, And I look absolutely just, it might be, I've got it here, 2 seconds. This is the first week of me having, I don't think the first week or the first month of having Jacob. Can you just see the despair in my face?
Yeah. That's it. I know that face.
It's just, it's just, but I was happy, obviously, but I was so tired.
Oh, brilliant.
So yeah, I'll let you get back to having your nap in between your breastfeeding sessions, and thanks for coming. And we'll be back next week with another podcast if we're both awake.
Yeah, no, I'm here. Well, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay, Dan, I'll see you next week. Have a great week, and we'll speak again.